Welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast, Season 2. This season, we'll again hear from the experts. These experts are social engineers and open source intelligence investigators. Sometimes, they'll tell us stories about their experiences, and sometimes, we'll have some questions for them. We hope you'll enjoy them.
Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We have a special guest for you today. We have Kurt Klump from Social Engineer LLC. Hey, Kurt.
Hi.
How's it all going for you today?
It's good. It was a fun day. I'm a little bit exhausted, but I compromised a ton of people, so that's nice.
That's always fun. For the benefit of our listeners, can you give a little bit of an introduction as to who you are?
Yeah, my name is Kurt Klump. As you said, I am from somewhere in the United States. I am a retired professional actor. I also have a background in flooring installation. I was third generation on that and did that for, since I was 12. I am also a musician. I play in officially two bands, but I think the count for projects on the back burner are up to four or five right now. I've dabbled a little bit in biology and biomanufacturing, and I came to this line of work when I was commuting 2 hours every day to go and be a foreman slash office manager in a flooring shop. Family flooring shop. I was sitting in traffic for most of that time and miserable. And Ryan, who's a longtime friend of who I've known since I was a kid, called me up one day and had me watch the video of his first DEF CON talk. I imagine, because of my acting background and directing background, to give him some feedback. And I watched it. It was really fun. It was a great talk. And then at the end of it, I said, "Hey, man, what is social engineering?" And he explained what the company did. And by the end of the call, I was like, "Oh my God, I need to do that. How do I get this job? Get me in now." And also for background information, I've always just really liked when people tell me what things they're not supposed to. It's great. So I've leaned into that impulse and made myself easy to tell things you're not supposed to. So Ryan then was like, "Well, I can get you, I can forward your name to my boss. I can probably get you an interview. It's the most I can do for you." Very fair, very equitable. Like, you got to get the job yourself. And I talked to Chris and Kaz at Social Engineer, and we had a really great Zoom meeting that was more fun than interview. And I listened to some calls and answered some questions about some calls, and boom, here I am. I've been there for about 2.5 years now.
So what types of things do you do for Social Engineer LLC?
I do a ton of vishing. I do mostly vishing is the majority of my work week. I make a few hundred calls a month, probably. I also have done some work in fishing, some fish design. I do a lot of OSINT. I've done some on-site break-in stuff, some adversarial simulation. I really love that. Well, I was supposed to do a lot of that last year, but we had a year of no on-site. So what else do I do? I've written some blogs. You can find those at social-engineer.org, maybe even some at social-engineer.com. I do a lot of stuff.
So when you make that many phone calls in a year, you must never get nervous, and you must be able to just sit right down and start making the calls. Is that accurate to say?
For me, yeah. I don't, I have days where I don't want to make phone calls. I just don't feel like being social and talking, but I don't ever feel nervous doing this stuff. I don't have a great fear threshold as it is. I'm kind of an idiot who just does things, which is, great for this work, but maybe not for for evolutionary survival. So no, I don't get really nervous when I get on the phone. I really like it. You can hear on my very first comp ever, I wish I had a recording of it. You can hear at the end of the call, you can hear my voice start to shake and break up. And it was actually because I was excited that I directed someone to a malicious website and she went and was logging in and I couldn't believe it was happening. And I had trouble keeping it out of my voice. You know, Chris listened to the call later and he was like, wow, that was, I can't believe you did that on one of your first calls. I was like, yeah, me neither. Can you hear my voice? Could you hear me getting excited? He's like, yeah, you're going to have to work on that.
Yeah, I think anytime that you're just about to get somebody to go to the site or give you the credentials and it's like, oh, are they really going to do it? And you get like so excited about it.
Yeah, so excited.
One of the things that I often hear from people when they start to do vishing is how nervous they are getting started. Do you have any advice for people who are super nervous about making some of those first calls and how to actually get into it?
Yeah, I mean, I do. So for me, I like more detail. I would want to know what exactly they were nervous about. Like, are they nervous because they only have 5 targets and it's really high stakes and they're all high value and like we need to get a success on one of these calls? I can understand that. That's a little more anxiety inducing than, you know, when you have a list of 20,000 targets, you're just making phone calls, man. I mean, if they shut you down, no one cares. There's, you know, 19,999 more people who are going to maybe not make as good of decisions as the person who shut you down. You know, I mean, and also it's part of, for me, it's part of my attacker mindset that, you know, shutdowns are just a minor setback. You know, it's great for the client. That's what they're supposed to do. Good job. But, you know, for me at emulating an attacker, I don't care. There's another target. I just move on to the next target and try to comp them, you know. Like, cool, I didn't get it that time. Next.
Yeah, I think that's probably what a lot of people really get nervous about is getting busted, getting caught, getting found out as being the hacker and not who you say you are.
Yeah, but that's so funny. See, I love when that happens. When the call starts to go to that place of they're trying to catch me and I don't, this goes to like this weird land of, can you validate me here? Can you find it here? And I don't really know what's coming next. It's so much fun because, you know, for a compromise, those calls all pretty much follow the same. It's like a riverbed. It just, the water flows the same way every time. You know your points, you do your pre-check, you introduce them to stuff. You know, you get that initial flag, then maybe something goes wrong and you have to get some more flags because of that. And then at the end of the call, you just ask them, hey, you know, if I need to get back in touch, what's your direct line or what's your email? You know, same every time. But when you have this wild comp or wild shutdown where you don't know what's going to happen, that makes it really fun because you have to think on your feet and have excuses for why they can't find you in the system and why your email bounced back and why, you know, whatever isn't working. And a lot of times, depending on your flag list, so my very first year at Social Engineer, I would run into, you know, intelligent guys with big egos, the worst, because they aren't necessarily security, like they get it, they get something weird is going on, but they're not security minded. Or they're more interested in solving the puzzle than they are in doing the right thing. And as they're trying to solve the puzzle and get information from me, they just leave me open. They just leave themselves open to me asking them the same questions and slipping up at least. Like, you know, if I need 2 flags, let me try to email you so I can validate you. Boom, I get an email. And then if over the course of the next 5-7 minutes, they say, my manager says he doesn't know anything about this. And I say, well, who's your manager? There we go. Second flag, comped. I can hang up now. You know, the ego gets in the way. Ego says, I just finished a blog where I wrote with Shelby and I wrote together. It'll be out eventually, where we talked about ego suspension in one part of it. And that's why it's important, like, you know, not just as a social engineering tool, but even in life to say, I really want to solve this puzzle, but I should just end the call.
And what do you do when you have been completely burned? I remember I did one engagement one time where the person that I called actually said to me, I go to these brown bag sessions and I know exactly what you're doing. You're social engineering me right now. What do you do when something like that happens?
I just pretend like I have no idea what any of that means. I just, my go-to is to be just like, I call as kind of a stupid guy. So when they say stuff like that, I'm like, what are you talking? I don't know what that means. I'm just trying to do the, your account won't migrate, man. Can you just help me out? I play completely dumb. Or like sometimes they don't leave you much room to say anything. And at the point, I don't, like, you know, I never break pretext, but to a guy a couple weeks ago, I had to actually say, I just don't know what to say to you. He was like, that's right, there's nothing you can't say. The phone on me. And then I just laughed because it was so funny. You know, he knew I was impersonating someone and he knew the guy. He was like, I know Rodney, this isn't Rodney. Okay, I am.
Let's go back to the beginning of an engagement. What preparation do you do? How do you get yourself ready for this? And how much preparation is there for you to be successful on your calls?
So if it's like a high stakes, if it's like a pen test with only a limited group of people, well, there's a chance I did OSINT on those people. So I know the people I'm calling fairly well. And we just did one of these where we got to really examine our target closely and then call them up and, you know, use things we found in the OSINT to build rapport with them, which made the calls really nice and easy. In a call in like a phishing as a service type engagement where we have thousands and thousands of people, I will go over the pretext and I will make sure I understand, you know, how they flow and where I'm going to start to pull flags from. But I don't spend a ton of time on it. I would rather start making calls. And if I fail a few times or have some really ugly successes, I just learn from those how to, you know, okay, I'll listen back. And if I hear where I went wrong and left them with too much space to like shut me down or figure out that it was kind of weird, or I flub my pretext and I don't have a reason for it or a way to build sympathy from it, then I will make sure that I patch that hole or give them less opportunity to just be like, no. It's one of the things I've learned. My first, one of my first calls ever, I had my pretext spiel and, you know, it was just how it was a two-question HR survey. And at the end of it, I was like, you know, it's just two questions, should only take a minute of your time. Is that okay with you? And the person said, no. And I went, okay. And then I hung up and I called the next person and I took out, is that okay with you? And I said, should only take a couple minutes of your time. And then I asked the first question. I didn't give them. So I learn by getting it wrong. I just go out and get it wrong until it's, you know, and I only need a couple of those to understand how the next one can go better.
And I've also heard you refer to OSINT calls. What are OSINT calls?
OSINT calls are, so we'll make those when we can't find the information we're looking for from doing just regular OSINT. So if I can't find, you know, what the password reset protocols for an organization are or where their login page goes, I will call up, but I have found a tech support desk number. I'll just call tech support and say, you know, hey, I'm on my way to the airport. I got my, you know, I got the warning this morning that I have to reset my password. I don't want to get locked out while I'm on my way. What do I need to redo it with you on the phone? And I'll, you know, and if they eventually start trying to verify me, I'll just pretend like I lost the call and call them back and hopefully get a different agent and say, yeah, I lost them. I found out this much. What's my next step? And if I lose them, I call back the third time and say, hey, I keep losing you. What are all the things that I need so I can just call you back with all of it? And hopefully they give me the list of password reset flags so I can start calling their employees and asking them for that info.
Or start finding some of the answers to those questions.
Just right online, yeah. Yeah, last week I did a couple OSINT calls and I was lucky enough. So usually I want to get a different agent when I make them and get more info, but I was lucky enough to get the same guy three times and we built really, really incredible, like really great rapport over the course of the three calls. And he was very funny and joked around with me a lot, which, and you know, I'm a chatty visher. I don't have a, like, a real concrete plan in action. So especially when I'm making these kind of calls that are just one times. So I'm there for it. We built so much rapport that when I called him back the third time to find the last bit of info I needed, he just gave me a temporary password. Here you go. And I said, how can you send a temporary, because I was going to call the Target and ask him for the temporary password that got sent through the email. Like, can you just send it to my email? And he said, I'll just give it to you. And I went, yes, do that. Do that right now. Thank you.
Yes, that is exactly what I need you to do.
Yep. And there we go. I got that. That was a wild ride.
I think there's another area that people really have some fun in creativity with, and that's coming up with the pretexts. Do you have a standard set of pretexts that you use, or do you get pretty creative and change it up for each client?
I am generally garbage at pretext design. Like, I'm okay, but this is where you get a glimpse of, oh, this is why you are an actor and not a writer. Like, give me the script, I will act the hell out of it. Ask me to write the script and I will fight you. Well, I won't really fight you, but I'll be very uncomfortable with it. So I have come up with pretext before. I'm not the greatest at it. Yeah, I tend to blank and be like, why don't we just make IT calls? Right now, I love multi-factor pretext. I don't know why, they just are working great for me right now. Usually I'm not an IT pretext kind of guy. I'm not that technical. So if I call someone who is and I'm using an IT pretext, that call is not going to go that well. Sometimes they do. It's a crazy thing. You can't make that assumption. I make that assumption all the time, but sometimes they go really poorly and they figure out I have no idea what I'm talking about. But other times they tell me things.
I'm very interested in this multi-factor thing because multi-factor authentication is a great way to stop people from logging into accounts when passwords are stolen. However, right, social engineering is a path to bypass multi-factor authentication. So do you have tips that you're willing to share with people on how that social engineers can get that multi-factor piece?
You can... you can always build a website that has a line for multi-factor auth. So it won't be like, it won't be like you're counting on them to have a token that they can just pull up a new code on. So it won't be like a standard, now there's a pop-up window that asks for multi-factor auth. I mean, you can probably do it in two stages and design something tricky like that, but you don't really, it's a lot of work for something you don't really need. The other thing that we've done is we just call and say we're having trouble with their token. It's misconfigured. I'm running an emulator on your account, and the tokens I'm pulling up for you are like all zeros, or it's like 00001. I know that technically is random, but I don't think that just doesn't seem right to me. Is that what you're getting? Oh, what are you getting? So we can sync that. And then there, you've got it. I've even heard you can, in some of these pen, if it's within scope, you can get their username and password from somewhere else and just go to their login and say, hey, I'm going to send you a multi-factor authentication token. Just click login and it does what it's supposed to do. It sends the token to their phone and you say, what was it? And they tell you. And it seems so legit because they got one when you said they were going to. I like all of those a lot. A lot of times, if you're not asking for the stuff that goes with multi-factor, they're not thinking that you already have it or could have gotten it. So the tokens don't seem that precious, but they are. They just seem a little less. If it's just, I just need your multi-factor token. Everything else I've got is fine. It doesn't seem as dangerous. So it takes out. So I would say watch what flags you ask for in front of the token.
Probably also do it in multiple steps where one time you either fish or vish their password away from them and then call them back another time for their token.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. It's just if you space it out a little few days, week even, you know, get the you know, fish them for their username and password first, and then just leave that alone for a while. And then later on, you call them with a multi-factor problem, and they tell it, and they can just tell you just that one piece of information. It seems so innocuous. It's going to expire in 30 seconds. It just seems like a nothing thing to give out, but they're not expecting that you also have the information that makes it absolutely lethal.
You've referenced flags a few times. What are some of the typical flags that you might go for on some of these engagements?
Username is always big. Password, people love to use password. We don't have a lot of luck with people. You know, everyone knows. Don't tell anyone your password over the phone. So we would leverage a website for that, you know, where they would log in with their username and password. Those are good. Right now, we're doing a lot of like cell phone and last four of social and date of birth, you know, some personal identifying information, some security question type stuff. We're doing a lot of the past, you know, manager's name, department. Email is always good. Email, user ID. I love user ID. To me, it seems like something that would just set off red flags for me immediately. And like today I was calling this client, and halfway through the day, you know, I was following my normal compromise path with everyone. And I would ask them for their email so I could get back in touch with them later, you know, once I fixed the problem with my website, because the website isn't, you know, just the error codes out. And they started saying, halfway through the day, they started saying, I don't feel comfortable giving out my email. Can I give you my user ID instead? And that was another, give me that. That's good. Go for that.
And another technique that I've heard you talk about before is the illusion of choice, where you try to get somebody to go in a certain direction, but you can steer them in either of two directions. So it seems to them they have a choice, and you don't care which one they choose because either one is a winner for you. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah. So it was last year we were doing an engagement where, you know, we had flags that were, there were security question flags, right? So one was cell phone, and then it was date of birth, social or last four of social, and mother's maiden name. And so, you know, I was calling them about setting up beta test accounts for a new, you know, a new web portal that the company was going to be using. And, you know, I'd say, we're going to have a desktop and a mobile version. So like, give me that cell number so I can send you out a link to download the mobile version. All right, great. And I just need to set up a password for your initial login. And for this, we're using either date of birth or the last four of your social. And I like this because, I mean, it'll still, if someone's paying close enough attention, it'll still set off, you know, some alarms. But if we've gotten to this point in the call, it softens it, because they're not thinking about, oh, do I really want to give this guy my birth date, or do I really want to give this guy the last four of my social? They're thinking of the choice, which one would be better to use? Which one will I remember more? You know, it just gets their mind in a slightly different space that's not as on guard or not as aware, because they're considering a binary option instead of one option and whether they want to do it or not. And I tell them what that binary option is. A or B, that's all you get.
And are these calls recorded that you do?
Some of them are. Some clients don't want us to record, but some are. And we have, you know, we have some that we've sterilized and we use in classes. You get to hear. My favorites are shutdowns. I think shutdowns are hilariously funny. So I do have some really great compromises that I like playing for classes, but I always think my shutdowns are really good and hysterical. So those are the ones I have a Word document with just lists of call numbers that are more than half shutdowns, probably. They warm my little heart.
And one of the things that people who listen to this podcast really like is stories. Is there any of those, either shutdowns or compromises, that you're willing to share with us as a story, even if you have to sanitize details?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was the guy last week who is like, I know what you're doing. I know Rodney. You are not Rodney. That was fun. One time I was calling this company and I got this guy and I could kind of tell that he wasn't on board with what I was doing. And I laid out the pretext. You know, I can't even remember what the pretext was. It was some like tech thing. I was like, so yeah, and you know, we can handle this. We have a web portal, which makes it really easy. And you don't have to tell me anything over the phone. And he went, oh yeah, yeah. What's that web portal? I was like, oh, just in, you know, it plays best with Chrome, but you can open any browser and you just go to website.com. And he said, yeah, that's great, Doug. I was using Doug as my alias. He's like, yeah, that's great, Doug. But let me ask you, do you also want some nude pictures of my mother? Do you think I'm effing stupid? And hung up the phone on me. And it's the only time anyone's ever sworn at me on a phishing call. And it was amazing. I just ran and got the call ID number and like gleefully went into the phishing group chat like, listen to this. It was so good. What are the other good things that have happened on shutdowns? I had a woman I brought her back too, where she kind of had, she wasn't going to tell me anything when she came back and had some doubts like, oh, I'm sorry, but I just can't tell you. But at one point she was like, all right, well, I know what this is. This is a phishing call. And I was like, no, it's not. And she's like, okay, well, I'll look you up. She looked me up and couldn't find me and then started going, I passed the test. And you know, I can't break pretext, so I just have to act sad that she can't find me. And I don't know what's going on with my employee account right now. A warning about going too far into that. I don't know what's trying to verify me here. Sometimes if it's just going to become a verification fest, then you're just going to be on the phone for 20 minutes with someone who's not going to give you any information. It's a little bit different. If you know someone's going to just be ego-y about it and maybe bleed some information, cool. Sometimes, like with her, she was never going to tell me anything. So I still tried to end the call relatively quickly after that. That's just an addendum to my earlier point. We were designing some training for a company and they wanted us to call and test out what their call center security was like. And the day before we got to interview like call center managers and people who were, you know, highly ranked call center employees and ask them about their security protocols and what they're supposed to do on the phone and what would cause them to not do that. And of course they were all like, no, I always do exactly what I'm supposed to do. So I called and we weren't sure how these calls were going to go. We had some like very loose pretext. And this is another account that we had real accounts to break into. And we all decided, all right, we'll just have Kurt make the first call because I like kind of just going in blindly and pushing buttons to see what works and playing stupid. And since I was calling as the account holder, I didn't have to know the internal workings of the company. So I called up and the woman I got was hard. She wasn't giving me anything. And I built good rapport. I was just trying to get her to help me. I told her that the person who managed this product for me had quit. And we weren't on speaking terms anymore, and I was trying to get it back under the control of my company. And she was sympathetic, but still wouldn't give me a whole lot. And I was on the phone with her for a half an hour, and we were trying to figure out, you know, which version of the product I was using. And I said, you know, 2016, and then she said, well, we don't support anything past before, you know, 2018. I was like, oh man, well, maybe it is 2018. And I said that, and she said, well, I see on my side that it's 2016. And I went, oh, hold on, I don't have my reading glasses on. You're right, the six just looked like an eight. And like that got me, that's like one of the fun thinking, how do I get out of this now? And we kept talking. She kept trying to help me figure it out. And I learned that, you know, account number and license number were different while I was talking to her. And that was, you know, that was an important little detail. And license number isn't quite as as serious a bit of info as account number. So I just kept that in the back of my head until for later in the call. And then as I was about to get off the call, after half an hour being on with her, I was like, hey, listen, can you do me a favor? Can you just give me the license? I don't need the account number. Can I just get the license number for this? And she said, yeah. And she gave me the license number for the product. And I was like, you know what? Thank you so much. You've been great today. I'm going to try to get this other info from my ex-employee. And I hung up. And then I immediately called back and got someone else. And this guy said, hey, man, I have to be at the doctor's in 20 minutes. I'm sitting outside my account, outside my accountant's office. I'm trying to give him this info that he needs. And to get it, I need the account number to get into my account to look at it. Except I accidentally grabbed the license number instead. If I give you the license number, can you give me the account number? And he said, yes. And we're in. And it was really like, you know, half an hour of work and then a 2-minute phone call later.
I think that's probably something that people who are doing vishing pick up on eventually, where you can just build those pieces through multiple calls. I think all too often people think we need to go get all the information on the first call that we make. And if we don't, then we failed. Where doing what you just did, picking up these pieces and calling different people, puts the whole puzzle together to get the entire thing that you're looking for.
Yeah, this is my favorite kind of engagement because each step seems innocuous. You just get a little like, I only got a cell phone number last time. That's not that useful. Yeah, it is, because I can call back and be like, this is the number I'm calling from. You know, I'm legit that person. And that might get you another little piece. But if you have two little pieces of identifying information for someone, people will help you.
I think that's truly legitimate for being able to show risk to a company, because all too often, just that one piece of information, they're not going to think that that's any kind of risk. Where once you just put them all together, like you just described, now we have a huge risk.
Yeah, yeah. And it really is starting with a crumb. You just have like this little bit. You know, the other story I was going to tell, I eventually was able to get a cell phone number. And with that cell phone number, I called back and got the right person at the right time and was in the right zone. And she just gave me every account PIN, like the other things, the other bits of info that we didn't even know we needed to break it to pass verification to get into these accounts. Like, she just offered to me. And all I had was a phone number. Like, a crumb of information got me everything.
And you just found the right person.
Just found the right person. And I'd been shut down trying to break into that account for 2 months. And finally, I got the right person who just threw the door open for me, took mercy.
One question that a lot of people ask about vishing is, in small environments, how do you succeed in a small office environment where everybody knows each other?
Yeah, that's hard. Well, right now we're at an advantage because everyone's home and away from each other. So the human firewall isn't as strong as it usually is. But sometimes you're going to have front-loading success. And then at the end, it's just going to be impossible because everyone's told or everyone's heard their cubicle mate have the conversation with you. And then they've talked about how legit it is after. Space them out. If you have the room that you can space those calls out and you're not calling an entire 30-person organization in one day, I would suggest that very much. You know, give them a little space so they're not all getting hammered at once.
And what persona might you take on in like a 30-person environment where all 30 people know each other, so you really can't be one of them?
You'd have to be a contractor, right? Or a vendor. That's the only option you have. It's the only way you can not be known. That's the only way to be sure. I would have to be a contractor or a vendor or a client. Those are the only ones I can think of that aren't illegal. So, yeah. I'm sure there's more, but...
What are some good metrics for people to focus on with social engineering? I think sometimes, like, for example, with phishing, we just look at the number of successful hits, like the number of credentials that we get. Do you see that as a good metric, or is there something else that we should really be measuring as success or what makes a good company's defenses?
We are, as a company, social engineer is huge on reporting, because you know the reporting is what will get the word out afterward. If I vish you and you figure it out and shut me down and then don't say anything, I am calling right back to the next person, and they might not figure it out, and I will get them, right? But if you report it and someone sends out an email, there's a chance they'll see that email during the call, or you know, before I make the call, and they'll know Doug Wise Guy is calling me and going to try to get my employee ID, and they won't, and they hopefully won't give it out if they've been warned about it. So we're huge on reporting metrics, because that really reporting is the best thing to track, or is the best for the company security. For us as attackers, you know, we like to, I like to track my compromise ratio, but that's not a great thing to tell the company to track. If a company is tracking my compromise ratio, their corrective measures are going to be punitive and thus fail instead of proactive.
Do you happen to see companies that are measuring that reporting, like the number of people that are reporting or how quickly that they are reporting?
We see it in our phishing campaigns. I have never seen it in a vishing campaign, but I, you know, not as a recorded metric, not as data, but I, you know, eventually in a vishing campaign, you're going to call and someone's going to say, oh, I heard about you. I know what this is. You called my office mate last week. I'm not doing this. And that's one of the ways you can know, oh, it's been reported. We have a client who's really great at, they're really great at reporting, and they're really great at getting the word out. They're not so good at telling their people not to tell us that they just got an email saying that we were calling, right? I mean, you know, if you're gonna report, don't then tell the attacker that they've been reported, right? Keep it to yourself. Just end the call and don't tip your hand too much.
Do you have any recommendations for books or resources that people should read to really get to be a good social engineer?
Yeah, read Chris's books. Chris Hadnagy's book. Chase Hughes, 6-Minute X-Ray, Ellipsis Manual. Nonverbals are, that's more for in-person, on-site stuff. For vishing, It's Not About Me, the Drake book works amazing. And Chris's books. The Science of Social Engineering, that's the manual. Read that. And then there's also Human Hacking, the one he just wrote, which is also about leaving them better for having met you.
Those are all great resources. So one last question for you. If somebody wants to break into social engineering, they want to be a social engineer and they want to work in the field, how do they do that?
Oh, you got to grow up with a company's COO. You know, I don't know. My path was so bizarre. I would say, you know, be active in the community, follow the Slack, follow the hackers and the social engineers you like on Twitter and interact with them. You can follow me. I am not active on Twitter. You can follow me, though, if you want, at Kirk Klump. I'm not a great first step, though. Just be active with the community. Come to conferences, show up, read, do things, network.
Yeah, yeah, I think going to Human Hacker Con and visiting the SE Village are probably great ways to do that. And like you said, do the human networking, get to know people, let people get to know who you are and what your skills are.
Those are huge. You know, people want to work with people they like. So go make people like you. That's your first social engineering engagement. Go make someone like you enough that they want to hire you.
That's a great assignment for somebody that wants to get into the field. Social engineer your way into the job.
Social engineer your way into the job. Don't even tell them you want a job at first. Just make them like you. They'll be like, hey man, I just recently lost my job. Are you hiring? Do you think I can do this? Yeah, that's the assignment. That's all I got. Come show up at SE Village and social engineer Chris. He'll know you're doing it. He'll shut you right down.
Kurt,
this has been so much fun.
It was great to talk to you. I love the stories. I love all the advice. Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is great. This is awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. You can find out more information about us at layer8conference.com and find more podcast episodes on many of your favorite platforms. We hope you enjoy these episodes as much as we enjoyed making them.